Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team, led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you're tuning in from, welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you're all here with me today. We've got another wonderful, amazing show. I've actually really been looking forward to this show for quite a while, ever since I met the gentleman who I'll be introducing to in just a moment. But of course, first we have a little section from my book, Everyday Awakening. As you know, I always start off my show with a little section. I think this one is the 100th section of my book, or the 100th chapter, which means there's 26 left to go after this. So we're moving along pretty well. We'll finish before the end of the year. I hope you've been enjoying these. So today's section is entitled, "There is often a huge difference between perception and truth." Our perceptions are tricky things. We think we know what is going on, yet we only see it from our perspective. That conversation we had with our partner, or the event that happened in another part of the world, is open to our interpretation based on our perceptions. In order to stay grounded, it is useful to ask ourselves a simple question. Is that really true? Is our perception or interpretation of a given situation actually true for other people and not just us? If a third party, someone not involved emotionally in it, saw or heard what went on, would they have the same conclusion as we do? What we often think of as an objective fact is rarely so. The more we question our perceptions and our assumptions, the more we realize how much of our belief is opinion and not fact. By asking what is really true, it becomes obvious that even our own thoughts are interpretations. What is true for us today is not always true for everyone else. It is useful to double check when we recognize that there are assumptions and interpretations present. Is that really true? If this question becomes part of our daily practice, we can catch our assumptions. We can catch other people's assumptions. We can be humbler when presenting our opinions. We can connect with people on a deeper level. So, can you remember to turn this simple question into a daily practice? is that really true? So I wrote this section after a while ago, but it came after I was working with someone in a session, and they said to me, is that really true? And I thought about it for a moment. I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, well, I know you think that's true, but is that really what happened? Is that really honestly true for the other person, for other people involved? Think about it for a minute, because I always assume, well, look, this is what I believe to be true. What do you mean? Is that really true? But then in looking at the situation, I began to realize, oh, well, at least part of what I'm thinking is true is really just my interpretation of what's going on, especially the emotional stuff around it, what they said, what they did, why they did it. And it just kind of struck me that we have so many of these assumptions that we don't even realize on a day-to-day basis that we really believe these things are true, and they may not be. I mean, they might be true. Don't get me wrong. I mean, sometimes, you know, what is obvious and something is true. But when you begin to really look at it and ask ourselves, is this really true? Is the way I feel about this situation true for everyone involved, true for other people? Is what I believe to be true, is it objectively verifiable? Now, look, sometimes things are true that are not verifiable. And I'm not talking about that kind of stuff. I'm talking about, oh, so-and-so is a bad person because they did this. Is that really true? Why did they do what they did? Did they do it from a place of maliciousness or a place of necessity? Or were they just doing it mindlessly and they were being careless? I mean, there's so many ways to interpret a given action, a given interpretation, that to say with absolute certainty, oh, this is what's true. You know what? In my opinion and in my life, I have found that what I held as very strong truths and beliefs, especially when I was younger, over time, shift and change dramatically, dramatically. And so that's another reason why asking the question, is that really true, is helpful, because it's also a reminder to us that even what we believe to be true in our own lives may not stay the same. It's not static and may not really stay true for us over the next decade, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. When we're young, we think that what we know to be true is going to be true for us our whole life. Older we get, if we pay attention, the less we hold on to these truths so tightly. At least that's what I've found. So that's the little section from my book. There is often a huge difference between perception and truth. And of course, that's from my book, Everyday Awakening, which is available at everydayawakeningbook.com. That takes you to the Amazon listing. But if you're like me and you like supporting small independent bookstores, you can go in and ask them to order it. It's widely available through major book distributors. So just say, hey, I'd love to get this book, Everyday Awakening, from Sam Leibowitz, and they can order it for you. Awesome. So I hope you got it. So my homework for you, should you choose to accept it, your mission this week until next week's show, is to just ask yourself, when you find yourself making a decision or a conclusion, to ask yourself, is that really true? Let's see what happens. Awesome. So now it is my pleasure to welcome to the show, and God, I hope I don't butcher his name, executive director and best-selling author, Kwon Hyun. Is that right?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Kwon Hyun, it's close enough.
Hyun, okay. All right. You know, I try to be respectful. So Kwon has been described as a mighty warrior, a magician, and a mountain of goodness. He is the best-selling author of Sparrow in the Razor Wire, Finding Freedom from Within While Serving a Life Sentence. His book was written for men that are doing long or life-term sentences, and in it, he shares how he found his freedom years before he was even paroled. He works as the executive director for Defy Ventures in Southern California, a nonprofit whose mission is to shift mindsets to give people with criminal histories their best shot at a second chance. After spending 22 years in and out of correctional institutions, Kwon was paroled from a life sentence in 2015 and created his first company, J Janitors, Inc., 6 months later. The following year, he received the Peace Fellowship Award for his work with the Alternatives to Violence Project. Kwon has given talks at TEDx, talks at Google, and has been featured in Entrepreneur, PBS NewsHour, and numerous other publications and podcasts. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Kwon.
Thank you for having me, Sam.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. I've been looking forward to having you come on for a while now. So we got a couple of minutes before our first break, and I would love for you to just start to tell your story. I know it's going to take a little while, but how did you end up in prison?
I ended up in prison for shooting and killing a man named Minduin. I'm trying to shoot and kill his three friends.
Oof. And I can't imagine that getting to that point to wanting to take someone's life was just something that happened the spur of the moment, that there were things that built up to that.
Yeah. In my book, I mean, that's one of chapter two, the first line says, I was not born a murderer.
Yeah. So can you give us maybe just a little brief sketch of like how you started and just roughly what brought you to that point?
Yeah, first generation Vietnamese immigrant. I grew up in Provo, Utah, experienced what I do now know to be racism. It's a beautiful state, but I did experience racism growing up. My father passed away from leukemia by the time I was 13. We had moved out to California, and I think a lot of my acceptance issues and identity issues were very involved in that after my father passed away, which then I funneled and I felt so accepted inside the gangs. So I ended up in a very violent and ruthless Vietnamese gang.
I see.
And that's ultimately what led me in and out of jail and prisons.
You know, it's interesting that people often don't get like why someone would end up in a gang. Mm-hmm. And I think that it does kind of highlight a certain point that there is a certain safety in gangs, and especially when the outside world is beating you up and pushing you down, that it is not a very effective way, but it is a way to kind of feel like you have some empowerment.
Yeah. I mean, it ties into what you were reading from your book about perception and truth, right? Like,
right.
My perception is that the world was against me. My perception was that there was an outside a world against me, and I felt safety inside the game. And the truth was, we were a bunch of ruthless, misguided kids too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can imagine. Just out of curiosity, did any of your fellow gang members end up in prison with you?
Yeah, quite a few of them went to prison for different things. Some have passed on, and I'm glad to say, though, that many of them are now just successful contributing family members.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
Families and are doing good things for the community.
Excellent. Okay. So let's pause there for a moment. We'll take our first break. And then when we come back, I really want to dive into sort of your story and and how your experience of being in prison. And this is a topic I've had other people on the show in the past talk about this, but I really feel it's an important topic of sort of the physical prison we're in versus the mental prisons that mm-hmm. we're in, and how that sort of awareness and how that sort of got risen up inside of you, and how that internal freedom kind of came about for you. Okay.
Yeah, that I think it's going to tie right in with your reading on perception and truth this morning. So I'm ready to dive into that.
It's kind of so funny because I'm just reading these sections in my book just in order, mm-hmm. you know, going from the beginning through the book. Yet somehow the section that I end up reading is always so apropos for the guest I have for the week. So the
universe has its way of working like that. So
absolutely. Everything is perfect, even if it doesn't seem like it. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time here on talkradio.nyc, and Wednesdays at 10 a.m. on KMET out of Palm Springs, California. And we will be right back with our guest, Quan Hyun, in just a moment.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Quan Hyun, author of the book Sparrow in the Razor Wire. So Quan, when you were a kid growing up, you said you experienced some racism being a Vietnamese immigrant, and you ended up joining a gang. When you joined the gang, did you ever for once think that you would end up hurting someone, ending up in prison, or going in that direction?
I think for myself, I justified it to say, well, I'm not really hurting somebody. I'm defending myself. Or, you know, so I think it's the tying in with that perception of just the things that I told myself to justify that I'm not a bad person. It's just these are things that these are circumstances that happen, and this is how I have to respond, or this is how I have to defend, or I didn't mean to hurt that guy, but he was attacking my friend. You know, so all of there's that type of work mindset. Mm-hmm.
And when you killed the person that you killed, did anything like shift or change inside of you, or were you already like so hardened it didn't affect you then?
Yeah, I would say that I was so hardened and calloused. I mean, I remember even at that time, I was like, okay, it was my life or theirs. And that's how I justified it for years, even into my life sentence. I would say for at least 10 years, 10, 11 years, I never once thought, wait, I killed somebody, or there has to be some sense of remorse. It was always, oh, well, I'm in prison for gang murder, and which then justified me, like in the California prisons, they have this pecking order of, okay, you're in for a prison murder. So that goes to the top of the food chain. At the bottom is, you know, people that came in for sex crimes, or people that or someone that killed their wife or something like that. There was always this whole spectrum, and to be going into prison for a gang murder, then yeah, but you know, I'm not as bad as those around me. That's kind of how we looked at it.
Gotcha. And so over the years that you were in prison, how did that shift, or the shift of consciousness or shift of awareness, however you want to phrase it, mm-hmm. what changed inside of you? What got you to see your situation differently?
Yeah, several things. I got word that my grandfather, my father's father, passed away. Mm-hmm. And finding about his death brought me back to my own father, and it made me think, like, how did my life end up here? And I contrasted that, like, I think by the time my father passed away when he was 35, and I was coming around on that age, so I was like, wait, I contrasted my life with my father, like, how did I end up with a life sentence? And yet my father, in his 35 years on earth, created such an amazing legacy. Like, you know, we lost our country, we came here to the United States. He created the Vietnamese Refugee Association. He helped our displaced refugees adjust to their new homeland. And he, like, his funeral had so many people there of so many different families that he had helped adjust to the United States. I remember as a little boy going to different states with him, and he was helping them fill out social security documents and driver's license. To me, as a little kid, this was utterly boring, and I didn't understand why. My dad explained, like, yeah, I do this for the community, I do this for people. And I was like, how can you do something you don't get paid for? And it was lost on me at the time, but the only reason why I like going is because I got to spend time with my father. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking about that. I also got a picture of my little niece. It was my younger brother's daughter, and she looked just like him as a little girl. And that also took me back to my childhood. Like, what happened to my life? Like, how did I end up here? And am I meant to die in here? One thing that always gave me an escape were books. And I've been known to be quite the bookworm and go down rabbit trails. So if I read a book, I become fascinated with that topic. I go to the back of the book, look at the acknowledgments, see what other books they recommend, or look at the footnotes, and just go down rabbit trails. And during that time, I was really fascinated with different books on entrepreneurship and business in general. But in reading those books, I went down different rabbit trails, and I stumbled and became very fascinated about stories of the saints, in particular stories about saints that had failed or made huge mistakes in their lives, but yet had gone on to create such amazing legacies. And these stories really drew me in. Like, I became fascinated with them. But then those lead me into books on mindfulness and spirituality and personal development. So all of that just became like this, I guess, perfect storm in my head, my heart, my soul, whatever. And it was just one morning on the prison yard. I was standing at the fence, and my head filled up with all these readings and teachings. And I asked myself, why do I have to view prison as punishment? Why can't this be a place that I remake myself? even if I'm supposed to die in here, right? Like what you were talking about earlier, perception, and like why, okay, this prison, we're all experiencing this the same, but why can't I view this as a place to an opportunity to make myself a better human being, like how these saints did, and what I'm reading about in these teachings on mindfulness. And of course, the answer from the universe is that you can. So I remember that moment. The sun was coming up over the hills. I could feel its warmth on the little blades of grass. I could see the individual drops of dew. And up above me in the razor wire, I heard a sparrow chirping. And I tell everyone, you know, sparrows had probably been chirping my whole prison term. I never heard it, but that day I heard it. And I would say it was from that day forth that it began for me, you know, this sense of consciousness, this sense of awakening. I then saw other men on the yard, many of them much further along on their journey, some of them perhaps not even awakened, but I saw like, wait, these are opportunities to connect with other human beings. We're all just on a journey. So I'm here on my journey. Whether it's in prison or not, I can make something of myself. One of the first things I did is I checked into therapy. So this is 25 years after my father had passed away. Mm-hmm. I began the grieving process. Mm-hmm. So then being the consummate bookworm, I became fascinated with the grief and loss process. In particular,
and this was, you said about 10 years into your prison term?
Yeah, this is about the 10th to 12th year of my term. Yeah, this is where this awakening began for me. I became fascinated with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's model on grief and loss. Mm-hmm. I put together a syllabus and I submitted it. Well, I saw around me, though, like men were also suffering and were also unable to grieve. That was like, I saw my own issue of an inability to express my emotions and bottle it. And I saw it all around me in the men, whether it's men that had lost their wives because or that have left them, so they have that loss. Men that had lost children or that have lost their, you know, have grown old in prison. Men that have lost friendships because they're transferred from one prison to another and they're leaving behind friends and there's no way to express this. So I saw this huge need for being able to grieve these losses and there was nothing there to help support them. So I put together this a syllabus, submitted it to the prison psychologist. He loved it and we were able to create the prison's first ever grief and loss group. Oh, inside that group is when I saw for the first time an ability to make meaning and there's a sense of fulfillment for myself. And suddenly I felt alive for once in prison. And then that became this, I suddenly had this huge appetite for learning on and facilitating groups and group psychodynamics and going down those rabbit trails, but then creating groups, getting involved with groups. And next thing I know, I realized, hey, I'm here, I am in prison in this little forgotten corner of the world. Nobody would know about it, but yet here I am. I'm making a difference in the lives of other human beings. So for me, I felt absolutely free. Goes right back to that perception reading that you were talking about.
Right. Yeah. Right. I'm curious, you know, most people who've never been in prison, experienced prison, there's a certain image they have that's probably from TVs and movies about how dangerous prisons are and people constantly getting killed and things like that. I imagine when you made that shift, it might have been a little challenging for some of your prison mates to kind of see you like, what happened to Quan? Why is he acting so different all of a sudden? Did you get a lot of that?
I did, but I think I got more. It drew the right kind of people, or it drew the people that were also looking for, like, they would come up to me like, hey, I feel your happiness, or I feel your light, or however we want to describe it. But I drew them in, and then we began to help refine each other and to help each other. Yes, in the midst of prison, but I think we were able to bring light to a lot of that darkness in there.
Yeah. So even though, you know, prison's not such a great environment, but you were able to sort of make that switch, and as opposed to like you know, some other inmates like beating you up for it, like people actually got attracted to you because of it, because they were experiencing their own pain and they wanted, in a way, what you had found.
I guess that goes back to even the perception of what constitutes someone that's incarcerated. Are these just rabid animals wanting to hurt each other? Is that what we've seen on the media? Or are these just human beings that inherently every human being is good and is looking for goodness in others and in themselves, but they've forgotten it, or it's buried deep. And so that's what I truly believe, because I was on the right path, and then it started to draw others, and I never felt like, oh, somebody's going to come get me because I am on this path. It's more, wait, I think I see a lost soul behind that man with a 1,000-yard stare. I see a young, scared boy behind this toughened exterior with tattoos all over his face and neck. That's how I started seeing these men.
Wonderful, wonderful. All right, awesome. So we're going to take our next break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about what happened when she started this group and working with the prison psychologist in this program, and the changes that you saw in other inmates as well. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful, Quan. Thank you so much. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. My guest this hour is Quan Hyun, author of the book Sparrow and the Razor Wire. And we will be right back in just a moment.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
So Quan, getting back to sort of your story, you had this moment of extreme presence, and it really woke up within you this desire to live a better life, I guess, in a way, regardless of what your external circumstances were. And then you started exploring this idea of grief and loss, and you work with the prison counselor to sort of create these programs. What did you see in the other inmates that you worked with? Like, how were you able to help them? And was their transformation similar to yours, or was it different?
Yeah. So, we could tie this right back into perception and truth again. In the California prison system, when a lifer goes to the parole board, each person is issued a parole hearing transcript. And the culture in there is men never shared their transcripts with each other. Each time you go to the board, they issue the transcript and nobody asks about it. Nobody shares it. They don't talk about it. So I never knew what the parole process really looked like heading into it. So, remember we're talking about drawing the right people into our circle. There was this other man that him and I used to share books. And one day he decided to, I don't know why to this day, but he decided to bring to me his 6 or 7 parole transcripts of every parole hearing that he had got into. He'd been incarcerated probably like 30 something years already. He hands it to me, here, you want to read my transcripts? And as I read it, I realized what he told me happened in the hearings and stuff and what actually happened were two totally different things. Mm. Here is the form of truth that I could actually see with my eyes, it's something tangible. Whereas before, I knew hey, we're looking at prison wrong. But it's just more like, am I looking at this wrong, or are these guys looking at it? But there's nothing really tangible. It's just like, man, this is how I see it. I feel crazy, but this is how I see this place. Here's such opportunity for us to become better. But then with the parole transcript, I'm seeing, wait, I know why the parole board is not letting him to go home. It's not because of his crime. It's because of how he's describing his culpability and the choices that he's owning. And I started to see this because at the time I was very fascinated with, books on personal responsibility and ownership and how powerful even words and the words you use can describe things. So I sat with him and I said, I think I know why they're not letting you go. So one of my other friends also began to sit with us and he gave me his transcript and we started helping each other. And so people saw us and they were like, what are you guys doing sitting there with Quan? And Bobby says, Quan's helping me prepare for the parole board. And they're like, you guys are crazy. Like, Quan has never been to the parole board. How can Quan help you? And he's like, we're helping each other. So we were sitting there and my friend that sat with us, he went to the parole board first, walked in with the understanding of what we had said or how we wanted to approach the hearing. He gets found suitable. And that opened the floodgates, like, whoa, Quan and them know something. So then men started coming to me more. But one thing I required was the truth, the transcript. I asked. It's not what, and sure enough, the dads were like, well, okay, but let me tell you my story. And they start telling me, and by that time it came to me like, hey, listen, it became for me a more efficient way. It's like, no, I will not sit with you until I actually read your transcript and your psych eval. I want all paperwork first, and then I'll see how they describe the truth, right? Their perception of the truth. So, that's how it began. And I started to see it's human nature to always cast ourselves in a good light. Yeah. So it's, the little thing of jumping onto a Zoom call late and instead of just owning it, say, hey, I'm sorry for being late. Oh, it's because this, 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 and this. So I still see it out here, but it's, And it's normal. And I think the freedom, though, and the liberation is to just own it, own the truth, and instead of trying to tell ourselves a different story. And that is where the men that used to sit with me, they all wanted to come home, which is, that's a great idea. I mean, that's great. But my motivation in sitting with them is, yes, I want to help you go home. But I think more importantly, I want to help you to get to this place of inner freedom that I've already achieved. Like I feel like this is such a responsibility of mine to share. Like I'm free already, and these guys don't see it. And I want to get them there. So there were, maybe I helped like 10, 12 men go home over those last few years that I was there, which is not an insignificant amount. But
when you were helping these other inmates be able to get parole and go home, did you ever think that you would be able to go home?
I'm not sure. I think so. But for me, it was like it's going to be up to the universe for me. Like, that's how I looked at it. Like, hey, if that's the path for me, then that's the path for me. But for me right now, I know I am right where I'm supposed to be. And I am doing for once in my life what I'm supposed to be doing. So when I was denied parole the first time, they denied me 5 years. So I said, okay, well, for the next 5 years, I can help quite a bit of men and I can become an even better human being. But then there was a part of me that, I guess by that time, I felt very led by my intuition or my gut. And whenever things feel right in my gut, I move forward with it. That's how I based my decisions since then. And that's how I based my decisions now. But even after that 5-year denial, I think I saw just the people on the yard side that when they saw me get a 5-year, they said, see, if Kwan knew it all, why would he get a 5-year denial? And I had some of my own inner circle and some family like doubted, like, hey, we think you shouldn't, we're concerned about your mental health. You shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket. Because I think at the time, there were less than 1% of lifers going home anyway. But for me, I just felt like, I know, I think like there's much more for me to do in this world. Like, yes, I can do stuff now, but my fate is not to be to die in here. Like, my fate was in here to learn, but then I could share this gift that I've and the secret I've learned and do much more impactful things. I just knew in my gut, like, I'm going to go home someday, but not just to go home, but I'm going home to do bigger things.
So how many times did you end up going to the parole board, and how did you eventually
I went twice. I got a 5-year denial, but I put in a petition to advance my hearing at a year and a couple months after, which also caused its own, like, because men said, oh, you have to wait at least 3 years before you put this in. And I said, why, where do we come up with these like truths that we say? And I questioned it. And so guys on the yard said, when I put it in and they granted it, they all said, oh, they only granted it so they could bring him in and give him a longer denial. So it was just weird consciousness that men believed in there. So I went in my second time and they found me suitable. So I paroled in November of 2015.
Were you surprised that they paroled you after the second time?
In that hearing, yes, because it was going awful. The hearing was not going well, but I mean, maybe that's, I had to go through that to prove my worth to the parole commissioners, because they were not giving it to me easy. And I thought for sure I was getting denied, but my attorney even thought I was getting denied. And we said, hey, let's just push off this hearing. This is an unfair hearing. But I said, you know, I'm here to hold myself accountable. I showed up today not to be found suitable, but to be held accountable. So let's go back in there and continue the hearing. There's no need to postpone, and because I felt a betrayal of everything that I had built and wanted to achieve in my own personal growth and in my own personal self. So I went back in, we finished the hearing, and they went to the deliberations, came back and started reading all the legal jargon, and suddenly somewhere in it I heard, and we find the prisoner is no longer dangerous. And I was like, what? Yeah, that's how it happened.
Wow. So I guess that was a big surprise after the trial going so challenging to hear that, like, oh, they're going to let me out. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. That must have been really something. You know, before I ask my next question, why don't we take our last break? Because when we come back, I want to talk about your life after prison and what things have been like since and what the adjustment has been like for you. Okay.
Sure.
Awesome. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. And we'll be right back with our guest, Kwan Hyun, in just a moment.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
So Kwan, and quick shout out to Patty, loyal listener. I saw her checking in on the live streams. Glad you're with us today, Patty. You get paroled. You come home. Was that adjustment difficult for you from going from this very structured, very closed environment to now you have freedom, or was it actually easier than you thought it would be because you already found the internal freedom within you?
Can I cheat and say yes to both? I mean,
yes.
There are so many things, like so much color out here, so many smells. The first night, even the first week, I probably only slept like 20-something hours. The first night coming home, it was too quiet and too dark for me. I was used to at that time the shuffling of men walking to the restroom in their sandals, the toilet flushing in the middle of the night, the jingling of the guards walking, and there was always this constant noise or low buzz. And to come home to complete darkness and quiet. So I remember waking up by like 3-4 in the morning. Not being able to sleep and being so excited, I'm home, but yet everybody's asleep. What do I do? Okay, you know what? Let me make some coffee. And looking through the cupboards at my brother's house at the time, where is instant coffee? And looking at the coffee machine, and I don't know how to work the machine. So I was like, why is it so hard? Like, why is just there no instant coffee? And I just put some hot water. And so then, okay, I can't have coffee right now. Let me just watch TV. And so maybe fall back asleep and turning on the TV and feeling overwhelmed because there's hundreds of channels. And I was like, why can't where is just CBS or PBS or just regular channels? I know, how do I get there? And not being able to figure it out because there's so many buttons on the remote. So even just little things like that. I remember the first time seeing the self-checkout kiosk and just, yeah, being fascinated and like, ooh, like, how does this work? Like, look at this technology. But yeah. Those are just little things that yeah. I noticed of coming out. Just, yeah, those little things. And there's always this constant consciousness in the back of my head, like, do they know that I just got out of prison? I know people know. They could just look at me and know. But nobody knows. But there was in my head, I kept telling myself, they know I just got out.
What was your family's reaction to you coming out?
Oh, they were so, so happy. They were very happy with me coming out. I think there were also challenges in that, though, because I think many of them only knew the Quran from 16, 17 years ago. I had evolved in my thinking, in the way I communicate, the way I hold space, the way I have my boundaries, and some of them, most of them had not, or maybe not had the opportunity, but never had to be faced with having any self-examination. So some of them had not perhaps even evolved, or there were still a certain family dynamics that they interacted with each other. And so now I saw it, whereas back then I was oblivious to it. And now I saw it. And so there's, yeah, so it's just for me being able to come to a place of acceptance, like, hey, nobody's better or worse than anybody. It's just we don't see the world the same way. Our perception of the world is not the same. And our perception of this experience together right now is not the same, but I'm okay with that because I know where I've come from, and I know what are my values now, and how I want to show up. So
when you got out of prison, you started your own business. You also now have started a nonprofit. Why don't you talk to us about the nonprofit a little bit? What is the mission of the nonprofit, and why did you start it?
Yeah. Oh, to be clear, I did not start it. I was involved with them. It's called DeFi Ventures. Mm-hmm. Their mission is to shift mindsets to give people with criminal histories their best shot at a second chance through career readiness, personal development, and entrepreneurship training programs. So they run a 7-month program inside the prisons, culminating in a business pitch competition that's judged Shark Tank style by volunteers from the business community that come in. Yeah. So, I'd love to invite you and your network in with this. So, but I was involved with that program while incarcerated. So I remember the first coaching event we had with like 40, 50 volunteers coming in, their smiles, their color, their warmth. And I was like, man, these are successful human beings. This was in Solana, so they had a really big tech presence. A bunch of people from Google, eBay, and everything came in. And I saw, like, man, these are very successful people that really believe in us. Like, yeah, the world is not what we tell ourselves about the outside world or how they judge us, or there's this stigma. Yes, there's a stigma, but then that's not all of the world.
Exactly. There may be some people like that, but not everyone is like that. But that's how our mind tends to work, right? We sort of lump everybody in together into one big category, whereas the truth is there's many different shades of that category. Yeah. There's many different...
Not everything is black. I mean, instead of being in black and white, there's different colors. So, yeah. But I joined... So, of course, when I came home, I worked in real estate and... helped launch my family's restaurant. But then when I found out that DeFi Ventures was expanding out to Southern California, and they were looking for someone to help build out their post-release program, I felt like, hey, I felt led in my gut, like, this is what I want to do. Like, I'm not doing impactful work like I was doing in prison. Let me get involved with them. So I joined their team in 2017. Over the years, my roles and responsibilities have grown. And then last year, I stepped into the role of executive director for Southern California. So I oversee our entire post-release program, our prison delivery. So I get to...
Wonderful. We only have a couple of minutes left, but I would love for you to just give maybe some advice to my listeners that if anyone listening to this, either on the podcast or if they find the video somewhere, however they hear this on the radio in Palm Springs, if somebody has a relative, a friend, someone they know in prison, what would you say to that person? How would you say they can best support the person they know in prison?
I think they would best support them not by telling them what they should do. I think they could best support them by asking them what the loved one could do for them, or what they like show up in a place of not like, okay, just because you're in prison, that you don't know better, you don't know any better. Just ask about their journey, understand about them, and get them to a place of awakening. Instead of coming from a place of giving advice, unless the person asks for advice, maybe just lead with curiosity and ask them about their journey, and just ask them about, so you open up the opportunity to give them the advice when it's needed, because they may not need it at that moment in time.
Right. Absolutely. Well, Quan, thank you so much for sharing your journey with our audience, and thank you for the work that you do. Something I've been very aware of for a number of years, that our prison system is not a reformation system. It's more of a punishment system. Mm-hmm. But there are ways of turning it into something that can really reform people and help people. If someone listening to the show would like to learn more about your work or learn about Defy Ventures, where can they find you? Like, how would they get in touch with you?
Yeah, they could find me on all social media at Quan X Quinn, like Q-U-A-N-X. H-U-Y-N-H. They can find me through my website, sparrowintherazorwire.com. If they want to learn more about my work in the prisons or want to get involved, come in as a coach or a judge at our events, they could go right to our site, defyventures.org. Defy, like defying the odds. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, thank you. And yes, I very much... I'm actually, believe it or not, in Southern California right now. I'm down in San Diego, but I leave Friday to get back home to New York. But I would love to connect with you more afterwards. And there are some things going on that can maybe help facilitate this. So thank you so much. Have a great weekend. Thank you for sharing your story. I really hope people get out there. Remember, his book is entitled Sparrow in the Razor Wire. You can find it on Amazon and all the major booksellers. Please pick it up, read it, and check out defyventures.org so you can see the wonderful work that they're doing. So thank you, Quan. Thank you, my loyal listeners, for tuning in as always. Remember, if you missed any part of today's show, you can always catch the replay on talkradio.nyc, and you can find us on all the major social media, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and we're on all the major podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, and if we're not on your favorite podcasting platform, let me know, and we will make sure to get on there. Thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget, later today at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, it's Frank Harrison and his show, Frank About Health. And tomorrow, of course, we have our Friday block of business shows, starting off with Philanthropy and Focus, always Friday, and ending up with Intangify, our newest show on the network. Thank you all for tuning in. We will talk to you all next week. Take care.
Listening to Talk.
business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.